Ben Larson of A Fire in the Mind, The Life of Joseph Campbell. Coming up, the power of myth in popular music, or Joseph Campbell meets R.E.M. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On the face of it, the archetypes of Joseph Campbell would seem to have nothing in common with rock music, that most modern of musical forms. But Billy Wausau has a different idea. He's an independent scholar who studies the role of myth in popular music. His theory, as he explained it to Steve Paulson, is that rock music is full of mythic qualities, both in its lyrics and in its instrumentation.
Rock music works on many levels. Its lyrics talk about protest and love and planetary consciousness and change. The music itself is global, using different traditions, from African rhythms to Southern gospel, to Elvis and Bill Haley's rock and roll. So it's a real synthesis of lots of forces combined in a mass medium, which is accessible to everyone.
And when you talk about myth, you're talking about somehow tapping into certain deep currents. I don't know, maybe going back into our subconscious, going back many hundreds or even thousands of years.
Yes, I'm interested in the symbols that Jung brings, his universal symbols. They're controversial, of course, but I think they're valid.
What does Carl Jung have to do with rock music, and what's the connection there?
Well, Jung defines myth as a story about heroes involved with gods or demigods. He talks about rites of practice or rites of rituals, and he sees myth as something that's capable of transforming our lives. So, according to this definition, I think that rock music is working on our young teenagers, introducing them to ideas, and bringing us heroes. For instance, John Lennon, Elvis, Robin Hitchcock. These are all people who are out there, writing about their lives and bringing us their lives in a very personal way.
You brought some music in. Do you have an example of a particular piece of music that would illustrate this ritual that you're talking about?
Yes. A friend of mine, Steve Kilby, a principal songwriter and bassist with the Church, produced a solo record with Danette Thayer called Hex. And this record is a very ethereal, quiet, magical record, and on the liner notes, Kilby talks about some ancient powers or forces that are still in operation on Earth, like magnets or wands or the power of mirror, and a song called Diviner is something I'd like to hear and share with you today.
Miles and miles of stubborn branded on the
Kilby is from Sydney, Australia, and not only has he written lots of music with the Church and had some hit records, he's also done some poetry, and he's written a novel.
You were saying earlier that there's a certain ethereal quality to that, which certainly comes through in that music that we just heard.
Yeah, the song is about spirit and about some of the signs that Kilby has identified, and he writes in a sort of ambiguous way. And he lets the listener fill in some of the blanks. He presents a sort of sound map, and you fall into it, and you flow with it.
So when you're talking about myth in rock music, you're not just talking about the lyrics, you're talking about the way the sound comes across as well.
Yeah, I'm very interested in the sound alchemy, or the power of the transformation of sound And rock music has incorporated a lot of modern gadgets and technology, but it also uses some classic sounds and brings them together in some very powerful ways, I think.
You mentioned earlier Robin Hitchcock. You have something by Hitchcock as well?
Yes, Hitchcock is a singer-songwriter and a storyteller. Often on stage, he'll lapse into these monologues, this rapid-fire monologue about anything and everything. And it's very bewitching and bewildering to listen to between the songs. A song from Globe of Frogs called The Luminous Rose is something I'd like to play for you. And the rose in classic mythology is about a perfection, an unfolding. But we also know that from life, from perfection, comes death. And in this luminous rose, Hitchcock spins a real quiet, sort of desperate, haunting quality in the music part and combines it with some very strange lyrics.
The bodies of drowned sailors and dead airmen flounder upside down beneath the roaring wave, and the fishes eat the flesh from off their fingers.
What's the instrumentation in that piece of music?
Well, there's a synthesizer layer there and a very basic echo drum beat. And it reminds me of some sort of funeral march.
A very slow drum beat.
Yeah, it's creepy.
It is, it's haunting.
And so there's that hex idea again, the trance quality of rock music. Comes across very well there, I think.
Now, when you say a trance quality, are you suggesting that it's actually designed to take the listener into some altered state?
Yes, that's one of my questions. I've asked rock musicians from Jerry Harrison to Mitch Easter.
Jerry Harrison, the Talking Heads member.
Right. About their role on stage and if they consider themselves in a shamanic role or as shaman. Most of the people have responded, yes, they are a shaman, and they do perform a sort of invoking, evoking role for the audience.
You're almost saying that there's a religious element in this, or maybe not explicitly religious, but a spiritual quality to this music.
Yes. In fact, Jerry Garcia has mentioned this the same idea, and he says that the Grateful Dead play in sort of New Age church in our society for the children.
What do you mean a New Age church?
Well, that may not be a direct quote, but he thinks that the rock concert itself is a gathering on a spiritual level, and that the Dead's music can raise the spirits and bring people together through this trancing and dancing.
Almost as if that's what ancient religions used to do, and maybe we now find it at the rock concert.
Right. When I talk about myth and rock music, I'm looking at combining some ancient ideas, some ancient musical ideas, lyrics, and some very modern technological processes.
Now, a lot of people would say that the kind of music that we've been hearing is kind of New Age music. In a way, and you know, New Age music has a lot of negative connotations. It's considered to be this mood music that is one step up from Muzak, practically, that it doesn't have real musical integrity. I'm assuming that you would say that's an unfair characterization of the kind of music that we've been listening to.
Yes, I wouldn't call this New Age music. New Age music is highly monotonous, studio-designed and played music. And I've asked these same rock musicians about their feelings of New Age music, and they all put it down without a hesitation as just a scam and just a money-making thing.
You brought along some other music by perhaps the best-known group that we will have heard so far, R.E.M.
Yes, R.E.M. Is a band that utilizes some powerful symbols on their record covers. For instance, their record, Green, isn't green at all. It's orange, which is curious. I think that's probably due to the fact that the planet is no longer green, but it's turning orange and it's dying.
But they call it green.
Right. So the power of irony here is working. A song from their document album, Finest Work Song, talks about one of the themes of myth, and that would be tradition. Michael Stipe sings, take your instinct by the reins, take the lead. It's all about getting off your horse and trying something out. Well, it's a call. It's a call to trust your instincts, to pick a leader, pick a hero perhaps, get some information, and then go out and make something happen, do some work, and perhaps start a new tradition.
Do you think there's a difference between listening to these songs at home on your stereo system and going to a concert and seeing the group live? Is it a different experience?
Oh, undoubtedly so. We have lots of expectations and a certain sense of history when we go to a concert. We want to have some fun. We want to be with our friends. We want to jump around and shout and get into the music and dance. That's different than being a couch potato with your headphones on or trying to do your homework with your Walkman. It's much more participatory. And as I said before, I think it's much more spiritual to be with a group of folks enjoying the same source.
And there's the whole performance tradition as well that, again, harkens back to early spiritual traditions because, as I understand it, that musical origins really had their roots in spiritual tradition. It was invoking something else.
Exactly. And this is a modern-day sort of service. And I think that Garcia is right on. We are getting together to share our spirituality and some of the messages that we like and we purchase and we go to see in a concert setting.
Can we draw an analogy between the instrumentation that we'd hear in a modern rock group today and any kind of instruments we would have heard a couple thousand years ago?
Many artists today are using samples, which is a way of taping sound sources and then weaving those into their recordings. They use drums and bells and whistles, and those are evident on all kinds of people's records. R.E.M. and Hitchcock, they all have these samples and they all plug them in sometimes. Sometimes they're hard to hear. Other times a sitar is an outstanding feature of a song. It's real easy to hear. Yeah, I think artists are very interested. Like Brian Ritchie of the Violent Femmes uses Australian instruments and gongs and all kinds of things in his solo work.
I would guess that the drum might be about the most basic instrument of all.
Yes, and Mickey Hart, a drummer for the Grateful Dead, has studied and traveled and computerized a database surrounding the drum and its origin and its uses throughout culture in our lives. And he talks about the connection from the Big Bang, the sort of big drum beat in the sky, down to the beating of rock music, and in fact, in our hearts.
What do you mean that the big drum beat in the sky?
Well, that's a little poetics there, but the Big Bang, he says, that started the rhythms that we are still utilizing today. And he gives us some caution on his liner notes. He thinks we ought to check our rhythms and maybe change the dance, because he thinks maybe we're not going in the right direction.
But he's drawing a direct parallel between a drum and the heartbeat.
Yeah, it's very romantic, and probably far-fetched for some of the listeners. The Church, however, put a heart on one of their records, a very scientific diagram, and so the heart has been used as a metaphor and symbol in rock music time and time again.
Well, maybe we can go out with a bit of Mickey Hart on the drums.
Yes, this is a song called Skywater, and it features Jerry Garcia on guitar.
That's from The Grateful Dead, Mickey Hart on drums.
Drumming on the edge, right.
And you can hear very elemental sounds.
Right. Back to the basic sounds, air, wind, water, lightning. Very important as origins of sounds in our lives.
Billy Wausau is an independent scholar of popular music. And for today, that's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Jim Fleming. Margaret Andreasen is on leave. Today's show.